So my name's Jen Grigono, and the first venture I did in, I hate to call it web video, of course at the time that really was everything, was 2006, called On Networks. Started a media company that produced original short form, mainly lifestyle programming, with a syndication strategy to get that programming everywhere consumers were, which of course was mainly websites, but connected devices were sort of coming up and nascent. And international, too, because I noticed there are a couple of folks in here who are definitely not from our mainland. And then the strategy, of course, was to sell advertising across that audience, aggregate that audience, sell advertising against the programming across that audience. And that led way to my new venture, which is called YouStudio. So about 2010, late 2009, we realized that the part of our business that was really fun was the content part. The part that was really, really hard was getting the videos that we produced to all of the places where they needed to go with the metadata intact in the right codec and container, and then getting the metrics back so we could understand what was happening to those videos, who was watching, where were they watching, how long were they watching. And we looked at that challenge and said, God, that is a huge business opportunity. And frankly, a mission that was worthy and one that we were interested in doing, which is how do we make this, take everything we learned, take all the workflows and the rules, everything we learned, and turn it into a cloud-based solution platform that would enable all of you, people sitting in this room and beyond, obviously, to take the work, the creative, and get it where it needs to go and find an easy way to understand what's happening to it on the other side to meet whatever business objective you may have or personal objective. So that's what we do now at YouStudio. And I won't really talk about the company in this session, but we'll talk more about sort of the challenges, the configurations, considerations for people who are in the content business.
And so my name's John Popola, and if Jen is the technology and distribution intelligence here, then I am the noisy, screechy filmmaker trying to figure out how to get my ideas into your eyeballs and using tools like Jen's to do it. So to give a little bit of background for me, I, up until April, was a creative director at Spike TV. And I'd spent the past decade working in, basically at Viacom, so at MTV Networks, at Nickelodeon, at the Nicktoons Digital Channel, at MTV Animation, MTV Series Development. And sort of why I think Amanda asked me to come and participate in this panel is because in a way, I'm personally going through what I think a lot of people are, which is this transition from the big media to being able to create your own content and essentially create your own channels, and how to do that and how to succeed at it and hopefully how to make a living at it, which is the part we're still trying to figure out, I have to say. So fingers crossed on that one. So just a little bit more. When I started at MTV, at a school, at MTV Animation, they were still producing Celebrity Deathmatch and Daria, and so those were all my buddies. And it was right at the tail end, it was like 2000. And do any of you remember Icebox.com? See, that's amazing. But it's so typical, because what it was is that basically it was the first round of sort of, web content. In 2000, you had Shockwave and Icebox.com and Atom Films and iFilms and all these brands that more or less either don't exist anymore or exist in a different form. MTV Animation was late to the game on that, and so they sort of turned to me because I was a geek and totally underqualified and said, find something great that we could turn into a show on the channel. And all I could keep thinking is, I don't know how any of these things are making any money. It's like a little 2-minute Flash movie. And then, of course, it all came crashing down. And so that was like the first beta of this, forget the big screen, let's just make our own content and put it out. So now sort of fast forward to today, in the past several years at Spike, in the same time frame that Amanda's talking about, I went, my job as, sort of promoting our our content, our award shows and everything like that, went from being entirely about creating good commercials to creating stuff. I mean, the channel actually started to become like the last place we thought about for promotion. And part of that was that, you know, Spike as a brand that was trying to grow was trying to reach beyond the people that were already watching. So to do that on cable, you're either buying a lot of media elsewhere or you're turning to the web where it's cheaper to reach them, but it's also much, much harder. In the meantime, I got really geeky into economics and as a total passion project decided to make a rap video about macroeconomics. Totally on side. And that went sort of, especially for what it is, went viral and ended up getting brought onto NPR and the BBC and actually participated in an Economist magazine conference in front of central bankers talking about economic, like I'm totally, even less qualified for that than to find hit shows on the web. And then we did it again. We made another sequel to that. It also went viral. And so we said, we have to, this is a passion we have, and I think we can make a business out of this. There's people that are interested in this subject and being told in a different way. And so we started, we left, me and my two partners left Viacom and Spike and started a company, Emergent Order, which is dedicated to trying to create content for the web, primarily.
Thanks. And I also wanted to say, we're kind of, if you have questions during the session while we're talking, just stand up and ask them, because I know some things might need clarification as we go through, because these guys have a lot of very intimate knowledge of technology that I have to ask a lot of questions about, too. So just feel free to raise your hand and we can address them that way. So the first thing that we came to is, now that this decision has basically been made for us, that this is where your content is going to go, you have this avenue as a something you have to address. Like, why is the web, which we're using also as a word in quotations, something that is special and different? Like, what makes this avenue different than the formerly the big media, TV and movies and things like that?
You want to take it?
Yeah.
So rather than talking about the medium for a second, I think one of the things when I think about the word why, that's so critical for everyone in this room to ponder is, what am I trying to do? What am I trying to accomplish? Right? So I think there are a fair number of folks who just say, I'm going to go make something and put it online and see what happens. And then you've got people who have, you know, I need to make money. Right, so I need to find a new way to make money. So I'm going to go create a web series. And again, I use the term web loosely, and I think putting it in quotes. Lately, I've been on the soapbox because it's not about the web. It's about, you know, IP. It's about internet protocol, right? Technology that's connecting all of our devices. And today, I think a lot of the viewing is happening as much on television, you know, connected televisions, as it is on the web. If you pull all of the new connected TVs around the world and then mobile phones, of course, the more obvious one. So back to the why, I think it's important, you know, if I think of the creatives I've talked to, the content owners, and I use the word owner importantly there too, because a lot of the people who are trying to exploit video are not actually the people who created that video. But you need to know, are you trying to gain exposure for yourself to build a reel if you're an independent potentially? Are you trying to make money on advertising? Are you trying to make money on transactional VOD? You know, what are you in this for? Is it a passion project, you know, as John talked about? And I think that, you know, it seems so obvious and logical, but it's got to drive everything you do. It really does. And when we get through this session, we'll sort of wrap back up and remind you that there are 1,000 different ways you can take your business, whether, again, you're an individual or you've got a commercial entity. And the reason you take the path you take is ultimately because you're trying to achieve something. You're trying to accomplish something. If you go into this not knowing what you're trying to accomplish, you for sure won't get there, right? And that's, like I said, it sounds trite, but it's incredibly important. So as you're thinking about the why, you know, what is my strategy? The what am I going to do? I suppose you need to think about, is it transactional? Is it free VOD, video on demand? offering it online because I want people to see it and I'm trying to persuade or influence? I'm trying to sell a product. You know, that increasingly people have come to us, you know, customers of ours who are, hey, yeah, I want to put the video out for free, but ultimately I want a purchase button. I'm not trying to sell. The content is not my product, right? It's advertising or marketing to get someone to buy something or do something. Is it I'm trying to get people to make donations because I'm running a nonprofit? All of those use cases are fair game for video, right? And in fact, I'd say the biggest growth curve today is not in traditional media, publishing, filmmaking. It's actually in corporate America trying to figure out how to take advantage of this new, you know, this new thing called, we'll call it web video, to do more of what they need to do. Again, whether it's sell product, increase mind share, what have you. So out of curiosity, because I know this is open to film and interactive, how many people in here represent a marketing function? Okay, so a bunch. And then I suppose the others represent some sort of content function, right? Making, programming. Okay. And some both, absolutely. So there you have it. So I'm going to push it over to John at this point and talk about from your perspective the why.
So, I mean, I think for, in a way for me, the why is also about, like, why screw the big screen? Because we did, like, you know, we were making stuff that went on television, and that was pretty cool. You know, a lot of people get to see it, and as a professional, as somebody that's a director, it's like you want to have people see your stuff. But I always felt like the top rung of the bottom part of the totem pole in the sort of structure of Hollywood and television, like it gets narrower and narrower as you get to the top. And so in a sense, screw the big screen because most of us will never get on it, not through those old channels. Like that whole power law, long tail curve, the top of that curve is very, very narrow. And so what's exciting is we don't need that anymore to make stuff that millions and millions of people see. And that's what's exciting to me as a creator, is now you can actually tell your story and have a lot of people see it. And you can create your own brand, you can create your own community around the whether it's an individual film or whether it's a concept, like, you know, we saw the guys from Epic Mealtime, like, that was never possible before. Those guys didn't have an avenue to reach millions of people before this technology started to really mature and become something that everybody's using. So that's the why for me. It's how can I tell a story and tell a story in a way that wasn't possible before? And then we're going to try to talk about the groping for how and how to make a living out of it. I think the one other thing that's so interesting is you now actually can make a living being a filmmaker in a way that was never possible before. So you can be a filmmaker doing, like Jen said, there's, you know, corporate videos has such a different meaning. You can be making interesting, like, cause documentaries for a brand like Nike that are beautiful films that are serving, whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit purpose, but you're honing your craft as a filmmaker in that space, and now they have more of a reason to do it because they can use it beyond just showing it at their meetings. They can put it out there in the world and have it participate and be a part of their brand. And so, again, I feel like along that power law curve, the tail is getting much thicker for us, and the tools are making it so that what we create can be done much cheaper. And, I mean, you can now actually film us in this dark room and see our faces. With the cameras you can buy now, which I think is the most revolutionary thing ever. I mean, you can actually, you could see me if you had like a Canon C300 instead of having to squint. So I mean, that changes the game. Like now you don't need 4 grip trucks to shoot something that looks beautiful. You need a handful of battery powered lights. So that changes the entire possibility of the kind of narrative you can tell. And suddenly you don't need to spend $2 million hoping to make $10 million. You can spend $20,000 or $2,000, and if you make $4,000 or $40,000, it's like you're making a better living than you used to be trying to have a day job and pursue your passion as a filmmaker. So that's the to me that's all the why.
Yeah, I want to add one small thing to that. So you reminded me. Part of this is the why's that there's an imperative. right? It used to be, and you actually touched on this, it used to be that there was limited distribution and limited content, right? I mean, we all know that. It was, you know, four networks and then the 80s cable, and but still there was a limitation. And today, because our consumers, the people who have changed everything is the consumer, right? We have control today. And we watch what we want to watch, when we want to watch it, where we want to watch it. So you get this fragmentation. We used to talk a lot at On Networks, my previous company, about, you know, this wealth of choice delivers a poverty of attention to any one thing, any one device, any one network, any one show. We tend to snack now. And even when we don't snack and we engage deeply, we're doing it across so many more devices and platforms. So as somebody who's in the content business or the marketing business, you don't really have a choice, right? I mean, if we want to reach consumers, we have to be somewhat omnipresent because they're everywhere. And you've got to stay on top of what's the latest new way people are, you know, the latest Netflix clone, right? Or Hulu Plus clone, or how are people getting their content? And what are they using? What devices are they using? So I think part of it is, I don't want to sound doom and gloom, but I think the companies that aren't embracing, you know, internet connected devices and content living everywhere, you know, they're going to struggle. And we were talking before the panel about a really big company, which in these panels, it's so, because people blog and stuff, you have to be more careful about saying the actual names. It really irritates me, but it is what it is. So I can't tell you who it is, but a very well-known company we all know, massive publisher that has lots and lots of brands. I was talking to the guy that's running digital there, and you know, he said, we will be Kodak. You know, and you can't imagine, you know, this brand saying it. We will be Kodak in 4 or 5 years if we don't figure out how to turn this ship into a video business that gets video everywhere and anywhere consumers want to be. And you can't imagine it because, you know, you go through this list of brands that they have under their umbrella and you're like, nah, no way. But it's true. I mean, it is a profound shift, and it's one that's not going to happen overnight. And it's been happening, right, for the last, happened early, you know, in to your example, your early example, Icebox. But, you know, in 2006, 2005, and now, you know, moving up, we probably have a solid 3 to 5 year more of evolution. But so it won't happen quick, but it's definitely it's becoming an imperative for us.
That gentleman had a question.
Oh, yes. You have a question?
Yeah. You know, it seems to me that what you said is true. And my last point was going to be that the view I thought y'all were taking was a little myopic. You know, when you shoot content, depending on its purpose, there are plenty of inexpensive access to large screen media, you know, television, whether it's purchasing time on on-demand channels or whether it's shooting for public access TV or just getting the, you know, your information picked up by a third party.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit myopic just to write off.
Well, it's just provocative. It's because, I mean, it's not so much about the screen, because it's all just pixels, right? And how big are they? So, you know, at a certain point, it doesn't matter. Like, what's the difference between watching a 30-minute program, whether it's Kony 2012 or whether it's an episode of The Office, on your iPad versus your Apple TV versus your Sony Bravia's crossbar interface versus the worst interface among them, which is your Time Warner cable box. It doesn't really, they all are exactly the same experience in varying degrees of laggy suckiness for the interface. But, so in a sense, it's not screw the big screen, it's hooray, we can all get on the big screen now.
Yeah.
But I think as an industry, the structure of the industry has changed. And what really has changed the most is when any of us couldn't publish to the big screen, and you really just needed to have
a deal with a cable company,
yeah, and MSOs and all that stuff, and the theaters, they had a business model that works. They could sell ads to millions and millions and millions of people at high CPMs if you're television, or they could sell box office. That doesn't work now if you're trying to do it the other way. You can't make Lost for the web today. It's impossible. It's impossible. There's no way you'll make money today making Lost. So that's the transition that I think is happening. We'll talk about that next, so it's a good transition to sort of how. But I think your point's well taken, and it's one. I mean, we're not
why
being myopic.
Why we put Webb in the quotes, because it's, yeah. That's right.
Satisfied? That's a good answer? Okay. The next thing we discussed is like the who. Who are these communities of interest that are seeking this new programming? And one of my favorite stories that we came across is Jen's story about the artisanal knots. I don't know if you guys have...
Yeah, I can talk about this one because it's my husband, actually, so I can say the brand. We were talking about the fact that now, with all of this connectivity, you have communities of interest that can spring up around stuff that, you know, beforehand, you weren't really, there was no way to make money necessarily around these small communities of interest. So we are transitioning a little bit to ROI. But my husband and his father and brother had this website, you know, called animatedknots.com. Seriously, if you search knots, it is. Search knots in Google, they're always the number one. And for years and years, it was just a passion project and a hobby. And they decided now with the iPhone and the app marketplace, we're going to develop, and by the way, it's all stop action film. I mean, it's photographs and strung together. It's video. I always tell him, I'm like, that's not really video. That's stop action photos. But he gets annoyed with me. So they put it into an iPhone app, and they make about $150,000 a year. No problem. You know, to give Apple takes their 30%, and they've put a price on it. And when they started, there really was nobody else doing knots. I mean, when I say knots, I mean sailing knots, boating knots, climbing knots, scouting knots, you name it. It's a very horizontal, you know, application. It's horizontal content. And now they do veritable videos, or they claim. But the funny thing about that is know who you're talking to, right? So back to that point about know your strategy. What the heck are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to make money? Are you trying to get exposure? What are you trying to do here? Know who, and are they well-fed, right? That's the way I always think about it. What's the market for what you're doing, and are they well-fed, or do you have a lot of competition? And in their case, it was not a well-fed market in the early days, but lo and behold, as soon as they put an app in the market, the app store, now they're 10 knot apps, and there are a couple that are free and trying to do in-app purchases to make money. And you know, three in China that cloned it that took, sadly, too long for Apple to take down, which is another little interesting side note, you know, the guys that go clone your app and trying to say, no, we're really the guys that made Animated Knots. And then you've got the people that steal your name. So it is amazing that there is an audience for just about anything. And there is an audience that will actually pay money for something good in the area that they're interested in. So, you know, before you write off some niche audience, and, you know, we're probably all sick of hearing the term long tail, you have to think about the fact that we do live in an amazing world right now where there are economies that exist. So you've got to think not just about who, but what economy are you going after? And then, of course, we'll get to the how in a second. But go ahead, John.
So for me, it's my only experience of any of this stuff is to follow sort of what you personally like. I hate focus groups. I always have. And the lucky thing about working on the TV side in promotion was, unlike the ad agency world, we never had the time to focus group anything. Because it was like, okay, we're getting the tapes for this show that airs in 4 weeks. The promo needs to be up in 2 weeks. There's no time to focus group that. You've got to go with your gut. You've got to try to tell the best story you can. And so in a way, I think being mindful of the audience is important, and but also being of the audience is almost more important in a world like this, in a world where, like, these silly econ rap videos I made with a lot of help from a team of people, they wouldn't have been good if I didn't actually genuinely like the subject and was really geeking out on it. And so I think that there's the authenticity bar is higher out of necessity, because you can't do all that work and take 9 months to do a 30-second spot. And so in a way, it's like you have to follow your passions with this work, and I think that will lead you to success in some dimension. And I tend to think about the business model stuff last, because it's just not the way I think about things. I think about the story I want to tell. I think about what gets me excited and how I can bring something to life for people. And what is great is now you can do it. And then what's become probably the most obvious, this is sort of the obvious thing, the most interesting and obvious thing about what's happened now is you can put it out and then talk to the people and get feedback directly and develop like one-to-one relationships on Facebook and Twitter and all these things with the audience. And yet, at the same, it's when I think about it, it's so strange that the actual process to put your video on the web is the same for everybody. It's democratized in a very, very literal sense. Like you're sitting there at night in your underwear and you click upload and you put in some tags and then you hit make public. And it's the same process for everybody. And there it is now suddenly for the world. It's a kind of raw, it is almost like a naked experience in a very literal way. And you're putting yourself out there. And I think that begs for you as a filmmaker to be your best self and put your best self forward. And we all end up becoming kind of personalities in a way. Again, like to think like Freddie, are any of you familiar with like Freddie Wong's YouTube channel or Epic Mealtime? And there's others like that. But it's so interesting that these guys are the ones on camera and they're creating it, or Louis C.K. and people like that. It's a different type of personality that's happening now, and I think that's just the most exciting thing. And so there's a feedback loop of the who and the audience. Well, I mean, I have a bias against intellectual property, personally. I know that's sort of a contradiction for the business I'm in. I kind of think it's BS. And has anybody seen the TED Talk? Forget the woman's name, but it was on fashion. And it was all about how the fashion industry doesn't really have copyright because of the utility of clothing. And what emerged from that is a constant need to update the styles every season. And what's also came from that is, so the next question is, well, don't people just copy your amazing designs? And yes, of course they do. So H&M copies the runway instantly. And yet, rather than that being this kind of, you know, parasitic environment where nobody makes anything, it encourages more creativity, and it prevents people from sitting on their laurels. And so you don't have the Disney who won't let Mickey Mouse ever become public domain. You have a constant stream of people innovating, and the barrier to entry is that much lower. And then the sort of punchline of that TED Talk, I'm not sure if this really directly answers your question or not, but the punchline of that TED Talk is, when you look at like the total market cap of the film and TV business compared to fashion, film and TV is a pipsqueak. And you sort of saw, I mean, again, like to terms of service, to DRM, to these different sort of portals and things, you know, you saw it with SOPA. Like, in some ways, the SOPA moment is the beginning. It really marked the change point, even in the politics of this world, where now the voice, I mean, that was like a bottom-up, I mean, given they're giant, there's Google and all these giant companies that are pushing it, but that was a bottom-up movement to say, no, we don't want those type of controls to be in the hands of a tiny collection of corporations. And I think, in a way, your concerns are going to melt away out of necessity.
Destinations. Like actual distribution of the, yeah, of the content?
Mm-hmm. And video is much more lax on it, but they're not really a content destination.
Right.
I mean, you can probably speak to this.
Yeah, it's funny. We've had this debate actually internally at our business, and it's more, I mean, to take the extreme, it's more around porn. And because we've had a number of porn businesses, including the big one out in L.A., interested in our tool set, because our tool set creates massive efficiency for people who have large libraries to upload into the cloud, transcode, push out, checkbox, not, you don't have to be technical to get it. So it just, it's completely content agnostic. And believe it or not, you know, the two biggest, early adopters, biggest need is churches, especially in Texas, the big mega churches producing a lot of content, very high quality, regular basis, long form, and porn. And I mean, it's not, we know that, right? It's faith and porn. They're usually pushing the envelope on technology, always pushing us. And we actually sat back and said, well, okay, so let's say we don't care, right? Anybody who wants can use our system. We're like Xerox. If you want to, you know, photocopy something that's copywritten and distribute it, that's not Xerox's problem. But we've struggled with where could we put their content? Or what access could we give them, right? So without seeing our app, it's hard for you guys to get this. But essentially, you go in and configure all the destinations you want based on your credentials, right? I have an account here and here and here and here. I sign up. It's there. It's configured. You drag and drop. For those that are curated, like Hulu and Sony, you essentially hit a request, and we take your content to them. And sometimes it gets on. Most of the time it does. But sometimes the content is not appropriate. So back to the highly curated. And oddly enough, or not surprisingly, I should say, not surprisingly, they are all, to your point, very, very restrictive when it comes to those curated ones, which, oh, by the way, is where you make your money, are very restrictive. And so one of the things we're doing, and this is really largely for the film world, slightly less for the marketers in here, but we're creating a set of DIY pay-per-view tools. We basically decided the market, the demand for, I made something, I think it's valuable. I don't know how to go hire 10 people to put together a paywall on my site. So I'm happy to pay however much, you know, you're selling it for to stick it on my site, and then I'll do the marketing. I'll use all the free channels to drive audience to that hub. And that, I think, is ultimately going to be the answer, by the way. I think it's don't fight with the big guys and try to tell them to change their rules. Apple's for years said no porn. It's going to happen organically because it always does. You know, they will. In fact, Sony is right now looking at adult entertainment. So they were the one when we looked at all of the options. We have a pretty good relationship with those guys. They were the one that is looking at adult entertainment is one of the areas on their Bravia internet service, their Biv service. So, you know, it will happen. It will always happen. It probably will not happen visibly, but it will happen. And I think before it happens, in other words, you know, you've got these third-party economies, right? They will slowly but surely start taking more. They will become a little bit less curated, a little bit better organized. Discovery will become easier. That will all happen. You've got to really start focusing on your own owned and operated economy. What is it? Is it a paywall? Is it a pay-per-view? Are you selling ads against it and it's free? Maybe you're only taking an email and a username and an email. You know, that's up to getting back to that strategy, right? It's up to you. But I do think it will come down to you've got to build your own owned and operated economy, and you've got to have tools to do that. So companies like us sit on the side and go, well, we've just got to, our mission is to enable, right? We need to be the great enabler for all of these, you know, filmmakers, content creators, marketers who are investing so that they can get the return on their investment. They need a way to, you know, make money off of the people who are coming to watch it. So that kind of is probably a good segue into the next section of our talk anyway, which is how. You know, we talked about what you're trying to do, why you're doing it, where the audience is, how do you do it? And I'll take
a pause. One other thought about that, which is all of this stuff that's happened is still additive to the problem that you're talking about, right? Because the MPAA, you can shoot people in the skull all day long and put it on television, but if there's something even slightly sexual, it's off limits and it gets and bumped up the, you know, the American, at the end of the day, it's American culture that we're confronting. So all of the technological problems are all just a proxy for a cultural force, you know, and sort of the tyranny of the majority. But it's still additive. So before it was just. No, it's true. But now, from a user interface, from an experience perspective, what Jen just said about you putting it up on whatever player it is indistinguishable as an experience. So you can still put up your movie trailer that doesn't have the thing, exactly. And put it on YouTube, and you can still come up with a completely different, right. Really interesting, creative way. It gets into promotion. Mm-hmm. So it gets into, okay, we've got this piece that you need context to understand what we're doing, and the big media outlets are too conservative, but we can still leverage, we can still use them
and
get our word out in a way that we never could before. And then you can come and see it, and you can still watch it on the iPad and watch it on your big screen, and mm-hmm. none of that. And also, it's all still additive. It's all still better.
So the how part of our discussion was, does this new web cause a change in the way we have traditionally approached making content? Is it changing the skill set that we need to have as production people, as filmmakers? And how do we approach, like, is our creative approach changing too? Like, do we need to focus more, like, on these smaller audiences so that we're more focused? And that was a question that I had mostly for you both.
So yeah. I mean, I can start about this. I mean, one of the things that's been really interesting to see, you know, when you start to look at the successes in purely sort of the short form web series world, regularity matters a lot. It seems like having like a continual, if it's not a single film that you're trying to promote and get out there, but it's a show, it's a concept that you want to do on an ongoing basis, getting it out every week or every other week seems really important. It drives people to subscribe it, and then they get it in their email, and then they come back, and then that builds the views, and people see the views, and it's a self sort of magnifying process. But when you're talking about now being a small independent producer that has a distribution, production's still really hard. It's not easier to tell good stories or to be a good filmmaker. And what's been really helpful, again, is the tools have come down in price dramatically. So you can buy a digital SLR, and you can shoot with the skill. You can shoot stuff that looks as good for 90% of the people out there as a Hollywood movie looks. I mean, that's really amazing. But I think that when you start to think about how are we going to do this on a regular basis, you still need that core team of people, and you still need some infrastructure but particularly the people. You want to have a team. And I think it's just a hard I don't know the answer. I know that the challenges have changed. It's in a lot of ways, you know, now we can all create sort of mini studios. I mean, at MTV and Nickelodeon Spike, the heart of creative was the writer's room. And, you know, all these really hilarious writers and creative people would get together and try to, like, you know, one-up each other. And out of that came our best work. And forget all the technology and distribution. That was it. That was what mattered. And without that, all the other stuff doesn't matter. And that's still hard, and that's still people. And if you want to bring them together, and you want to have something sustainable where people can actually be making a living in that environment, It's like we have to find, like, it's like we're slowly, like, groping our way towards how to build new studios and production companies with a different, entirely different cost structure. I mean, and in a way, some of the old models on the cost side are going to be the biggest victims of what's happening. Because, you know, particularly the way, on the feature side, the way movies are budgeted, the above the line, below the line, the nature of the way that the union agreements are structured is completely incompatible with the current income possibilities. It just, you can't. So, but the benefit is more people can be filmmakers now. I mean, I remember I heard somewhere that George Lucas had said something to the effect of when a young girl in Idaho can make a movie, filmmaking will be an art, like painting. And until that point, it isn't, because it's inaccessible in a way that painting and sketching and sculpting and the classical arts have always been. They've been accessible to people. You didn't need to be rich or connected to be a painter. And I think we're very, very close to that now for filmmaking, which is the most exciting thing in the entire world, because the types of stories that we can now tell and find is amazing, and we can make a living at it. But it's now a much more like smooth and lumpy staircase climbing up the ladder to building a business around doing that in an ongoing way.
Yeah, so on the business side, popping off, so I think on the content and the creation side, certainly that was a really good, I love that George Lucas quote. I mean, it's so true. On the business side, there's a whole new set of challenges where being connected, we're trying to break down the accessibility problems on the business side too, right? Your studio is all about that. Spotson's about that as well. The key, I think, is that media and creators need to start to behave more like marketers, and marketers need to start to behave a little more like media and creators. And that's, again, it sounds logical and obvious, but it's hard to do, because all of a sudden, somebody who's just been in the creative world their entire life and they've created films, short films, feature films, content, web series, to start to think about this notion of hub and spoke and which outlets do I use for promotion and which ones do I use to make my money, is just, it's a foreign concept. And that's why, none of the changes we're talking about are happening overnight, right? Because there are behavioral shifts that have to happen before the world becomes smooth again. Go ahead, you have a quick question.
I just feel like in a lot of ways that film is kind of catching up with advertising. I mean, advertisers and brands have got all these different mechanisms to communicate their story, mm-hmm. of their brand. Direct mail, mm-hmm. television, radio, mm-hmm. billboards, park benches, I mean, all these different mechanisms. So we've had to be extremely smart in finding those definitive targets for those businesses and to communicate with them. I think what this has really done is allow those filmmakers to really find those niches and truly be able to market directly to them.
Yeah.
If you have an extremely niche, a movie you want to do for vegan dogs, I mean, the odds of getting somebody to pick that up and want to... Sorry.
Yeah. My dog's vegan.
But I mean, you have a very hard time getting anyone to pick that up and getting that in front of anyone's face. But now you actually have that opportunity if you start to think like
exactly
you're able to get those messages in front of people.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the gentleman in the front, for those who couldn't hear in the back, maybe, is that you now have the marketers have always understood the well-worn paths of getting a message out and all of it, using all of the different vehicles and capabilities, park benches, billboards. Radio, even, believe it or not, still today. And filmmakers and media just haven't traditionally needed that necessarily, right? It goes back to that distribution was limited and known, and now it's unknown and unlimited. And frankly, to take that a step further, it's not just using the distribution to watch your show or your film. It's using distribution to market and to promote your show or your film. And, again, it gets back up to what we were saying, in the early, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to make money? And if you are, you want to have your own owned and operated economy, right, that is digitally connected. And then you also want to take advantage of these, that's your hub. So we talk a lot about hub and spoke models. The spokes need to be used for something. I don't know. Maybe on Hulu you do put your show or your film out there. But on YouTube you only use it for promotional material. Maybe you have a behind-the-scenes footage that is a regular podcast. It's the strategy that you put together there, again, just has to be connected back to what you're trying to accomplish. And I think if you imagine what that, again, who are you going after? Are they well-fed? You may not have to do something every week. You may be able to do something once a month because it's an audience that's just rabid for what you have because there's nothing else out there. So even if you don't talk to that audience for a month, they're going, you know, the next time you put something out, they're ready for it. They're pouncing on it. It's why this is hard. I mean, there are so many different configurations, but it just gets back to understanding who you're talking to, thinking like a marketer. Who are you talking to? How are you talking to them? How do you want to make money off of them? Indirectly, directly selling product.
But also thinking like a marketer when you're a filmmaker is gross.
Now, I want to say, like, the last, I still do lots of traditional 30-second TV producing, and the last three campaigns I've done, I didn't look at traditional directors and teams to produce them at all. I went straight to guys that have amazing web presence, and I felt like it was a complete success. I didn't think that these were campaigns that a traditional 30-second spot director would embrace and, like, do a great job with. And I haven't looked back from that decision. I don't know that moving forward I'll be able to,
I mean, the weirdest thing, in trying to make everything ads, is that the ad world is creative along many dimensions, but completely rigid along many more. So, you know, if you're trying to direct a commercial with a traditional ad agency, you kind of have to have already directed that commercial first. There's the joke that, okay, we love that your bathroom stuff. Have you ever shot any blue bathrooms? You know, there's so many directors that want to do advertising work that the agencies can be so selective that they can really just look for who's already made our spot so that we don't have to take any risk at all.
I guess, but there's a shift. I think even traditional, like, they were completely open to exploring, even though they hadn't worked in that way before.
And that's part of the change that's happening. Yeah. And so in a sense, I think that it's all still filmmaking. So I think and you said filmmakers need to act more like marketers. I think marketers are hopefully getting more out of filmmaking. I'm hoping that that's more of
it. Yeah, it's going both ways.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know, and you did. You said it's both ways, but I think it tends to be like filmmakers now need to spend more time on the marketing and on the advertising and on those models and all that stuff, but I think you can see, especially in even just recently, there's been like these waves of 3-minute commercials, which is a total like black swan in the world. Like, oh, people don't have any attention span, and now you've got 3-minute commercials and 30-minute viral videos about African warlords. It's like this is part of why we call our company Emergent Order, because you can never know in advance what is going to emerge out of a diverse society. It's always going to. There's a trillion interactions, and ways of thinking, ways of communicating are actually coming into being that don't exist.
I guess my only point was, as a marketer, you have the ability to find extreme niche people, no matter where they are in the world. That sells, a specific widget, you can find them. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers haven't had the opportunity. You may have a great concept, but there may only be 10,000 people globally that would be interested in that concept. Well, how do you get those out to them in traditional formats? Mm-hmm. You can't. Now they finally have the opportunity to make that happen.
It makes more
films viable.
It does. It makes more look at Animated Knots, right? I mean, there's a viable business there that there's just no way that business was viable before the internet, right? I think the other thing that's important, and we talk a lot about this in our business with customers and prospects, is start to cordon off your fans. Start to imagine that you've got a fan base on, tether yourself to them. Right? And once you've tethered yourself to them through Facebook and Twitter and all of the avenues for communicating directly with your fan base, once they're really tethered to you, you can drop offers in, you can sell stuff, right? I mean, there's nothing, it does feel a little icky. I know it's like, oh, I gotta act like it feels cheesy. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to make money, right, if you're in that vertical, we're trying to make money, not just get exposure. You gotta get people to part with dollars, and the only way you do that is asking, and the best way to do that is to ask the people who are gonna produce less friction to opening up their wallet, which is people who follow you, people who care, people who follow things like you. And I agree, to this gentleman's point up in front, that's what marketers have done for years and years and years and years, and are just killer at.
That's true,
right? And so It's something that the filmmaking community needs to understand. Maybe not on the content side, forget the content side of marketing, but certainly really understanding how do I go find that, you know, redheaded, left-handed, lives in Central Texas. They do it all day long, and the tools exist. So discovery is, you know, this is all sort of a roundabout way to talk about discovery. It's going to get harder and harder and harder because the amount of content, I think the stat is 90% of all web traffic by 2015 will be video. Not surprisingly because of the data, you know, consumption, but that's huge. I mean, this isn't just the example I gave you about this massive publisher talking about if we don't become video, we'll be like Kodak. That's huge. I mean, this isn't just a small shift. This is seismic. So that's one of the hows. I think the where, I'm looking at the time we're getting.
Yeah, I know. That's why I moved to the next.
So,
yeah.
Do you want me to talk about that, or you want to have
a preamble? You had one question?
Quick. Yesterday I was talking to the guy from Vantage, and he made a very interesting point that the integration of their content, they recognize there's two different things going on. Everybody should be able to do it. One is that you're talking to people who are expert at football and feeding them a style and form that experts need to know. And at the same time, the problem with talking about zero targeting, redhead in Texas and whatever, it tends to get you thinking that your content already has an audience rather than I've got to figure out how to make people actually care about it.
Yeah. It's a dynamic segmentation versus thinking of your segment up front. No, it's a really interesting point. And at one point, we actually owned a URL called Dynamic Segmentation because we were fascinated with the science around.
That's an easy one to find, by the way.
Well, we were just fascinated with the science behind that, right? It's, you know, segment, it's so antithetical. It's the opposite of how we as marketers think, right? We think, define the segment, go find the segment. But you're exactly right. If you put something out there and you put it, you know, you become omnipresent, put it in the right spots, you don't know if it's an 80-year-old grandmother who happens to find that topic really interesting. She loves knots, right? Now she's part of the animated knots community. And so how do you segment that, right? So you're right. It's a valid point about thinking about it demographically, right? You have to think about it in terms of maybe more psychographically and more in terms of where availability and accessibility.
I think one other thing before we move on to where, which I think we've already touched on a lot,
okay.
The where, but is – I think that there's always a pendulum swing between being generalists and being specialists. And I think tools and technology changes that disrupt all the very tight-knit specialization that's happened in a configuration of an industry just sort of hit a blender to it. And now suddenly everybody's got to be a generalist because nobody knows how the hell anything is going to get done. But then we start to coalesce around new specialization. And new, so this idea that everybody now has to actually be a studio that's not just writing, coming up, directing, but then you're also having to maintain your Hootsuite because you're also the marketer, and now you've also got to do Chargeify because you're also doing e-commerce. So that, like, we're all becoming generalists, but there's going to then be, and it's happening, and the tools are coming up. But we're going to specialize again, and it's not going to be in one swoop. It's going to be in bits and pieces. But there's a reason why TV networks have departments, and those departments focus on the things they do. That's not bad. It's good. But I think what's going to happen is the concept of the firm is being destroyed. The concept of a big company is becoming less. To be like an econ geek, it's like the Coase theory of the firm. Transaction costs are going down, so we don't need to be in the same place. I mean, the WordPress core developer, Matt, who's got that automatic company, it's an entirely distributed company. They don't have an office. 103 employees, and every one of them lives in a different place. So this notion that we need sort of a big building with departments and directors will always be true. It just won't always be a big building with different rooms and different departments. But we're going to need to... Let me be a filmmaker and let you, because you're passionate about marketing and communications and PR, you'll do that. But maybe we're not always working together on the same project. Maybe I'm hiring you maybe I'm subscribing to your service. And maybe I'm, you know, again, like it's a, it, the structure of the firm, the structure emerges around the particular needs. Because things are becoming modular and plug, and they can plug in.
I think it's a really good point, and I can tie it back to the where for a second, so we can just at least touch on that, Amanda. I think the we have to think generally. We have to execute specifically. And that's how that it could not be. It is always true. It's a universal law, right? We have to focus on the things we're good at. We have to understand what we need to do and what we're not good at, and get either other people to focus on it, or hire out, or get tools, or and that's the reality, right? We have to think broadly today, and maybe one day we'll get to think, you know, a little bit more specifically. But we have to execute specifically, and you know, to know where you need to execute, obviously, is that first. So there's a question in the back. I just don't want to be.
So, you know, one thing that was really interesting to me is, you know, the YouTube announcement back in August, I guess, of, you know, their 100 premium channels, where, you know, they're getting down to some really specific niches. A lot of them are, you know, Ashton Kutcher channel or GDP channel, but there's a Pets channel, the Fremantle Media, that makes, you know, American Idol and all that. They're doing a Pets channel. And, you know, on your vegan dog point, I mean, it's interesting to me that you could, you know, go pilot that, show that you have a little bit of an audience, and then what does Fremantle have to lose in throwing that up? Because there's not 24 hours in a day anymore. There's not a prime time slot. There's kind of limitless amount of content that they could curate through there, and, you know, that's an interesting kind of where to me, is if those, especially if those YouTube channels take off. So I think a lot of those channels are out furiously creating content right now. But I think that it's going to get to a point where they're getting content submitted to them from talented filmmakers anywhere they're playing.
But and YouTube's just functioning like a big, huge cable company there, right? So they own the rights to that content. They're paying for it. They're buying it. And they're saying you can't put it anywhere else for, I think it's 5 years. And then you can't make, we won't, you know, we'll split revenue with you after we make our money back, right? So really what's funny about that is, one, it shows the cream's rising to the top in terms of quality. YouTube basically said, okay, we can't make our business work with user-generated content, so we're going professional now, and we're going to start to compete with Hulu and so forth, but we're going to do it in a way that's different because we're going to go fund original content. We're going to spend $100 million. Of course, Hulu came out and said, we're spending $500 million, so take that. But in both instances, they're behaving exactly like a cable company. I am buying the rights. When I say cable, I mean original cable company that funds original programming. I'm buying the rights to this for some insane amount of time. You can't do anything else with it. And I'm not sure that's good for the filmmaker, oddly enough. I think it's great for the industry, but really it's just, okay, yet another big guy who owns, you know, my soul on this thing, and I'll do it. I think it's great for marketing. I think for the people who got those deals, and I know a couple of them, some are well-known, you know, Fremantle, some are less known. I think it's a great way to make some money, but it's really just they're funding them to make the programming, so it's not like there's massive profit on top. And I know what the economics are for having good content on the RPMs, right, for YouTube, and they're not going to make that. It's years before YouTube's going to make that money back. But it is great in that they are going to strive to make their money back quickly, and they're going to push that economy along. So the big guys are still, you know, the tent poles are really going to continue to push the money flow. And I think that ultimately results in a lot more opportunity for everybody else. But there's still scarcity in that system, and they realized it, right? We've got to go create scarcity again, because we can't figure out the economic model when there isn't any. And we thought the cream would rise to the top in our user-generated content. It sort of has, but it's not. It hasn't been enough to drive the economy. So they've sort of created fabricated an economy around digital. So anyway, I'm sure you have a lot to say about that.
I got lost. I think we're sort of at
like
the
they're
end.
Playing the music.
But
mostly that. So I guess the where question is like, does it matter where it's?
Yeah, I mean, the question there is where do you want it to go? Why do you need it to be there? And I think the metrics, is it working?
Sorry, next.
So where Amanda was going to take us, but do you want to wrap up or do you?
Yeah, the metrics is it was key. Is. I mean, you got to listen to them and.
Well, and put knobs and levers and dials on what you're doing, right? Because if you don't have a way to adjust because you don't really know what you're measuring, it kind of gets back to knowing what you're doing. It's just thinking. You know, that'll be my last.
That's going to be your last word.
Yeah, mine is just think. People really don't like to think. It's sometimes hard to admit. We don't like change, but we really don't like to think all the time. In this right now, at this stage, in this era, thinking, there's a high premium on thinking.
I would just say to wrap up is up until a couple of years ago, I sort of thought I was in a fluffy business that didn't really matter. You know, entertainment, it's like, who cares? You know, it's this thing that when you have leftover time after you've done real things, you turn on the boob tube. And then my partner Josh and I went to NAB for the first time. We saw how many different organizations and every aspect of the economy is using content and telling stories. And then it made us think, well, you know, in a lot of ways, telling stories is as fundamental to the human experience as eating and sleeping and shelter and sex and the core things that we care about. I mean, it's how we understand the world. It's how we process. It's how we learn. And so what distributed technology lets us do is tell more stories in more different types of ways. And I think it's a fundamentally human thing. And so what's so exciting about this is the fact that our stories are getting more human as a result. They're getting closer to us, and we're getting closer to the people we're talking to, and it's actually becoming, in some ways, the technology is letting us tell stories that the way people used to tell.
Oh, really?
So, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. Very smart.
Yeah, we'll stick around, too, up here for a little bit if you guys have other questions or want cards or whatever.